You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 12 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting markets with Nick Kuntz, checking in with Rupert Finnemore from Easy Properties as they turn 1 year old, and then we're talking with debt busters on high debt levels in South Africa, absolutely making it almost impossible to save, and way worse post-pandemic. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines. Process shareholders approve the share swap. Now it's up to the individual Naspers shareholders to decide if they do or don't. We've chatted with some folks. It does generally seem to be the view that if you swap your shares, you'll get a modest uplift, but concerns around complexity. That story was from MoneyWeb. From Fin24, Ramaphosa extends level 4 lockdown. No surprise there. But some relief for tours as it is resumed and gyms and restaurants can open. But still, the curfew is in place and no alcohol sales. Morning markets, lots of green. And Friday, the S&P up 1.1% and NASDAQ up 0.7%. In Asia, we've got Sydney up 0.6%, Tokyo up 2.2%. Commodities red over the weekend. Gold 1804, Rand 1427. And top 40 opening call, about 50 points to the red, which is a little under 0.1%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kuntz, portfolio manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, morning. Appreciate your early morning time. An oddity which I want to run past you. We've got the news full of sporadic bits of violence around the country, most notably up here in Johannesburg and down in KZN. Yet markets seem to kind of shrug it off. I mean, our market's looking to open slightly to the red. I mean, you know, sometimes a big event will spook a market, but generally markets seem to ignore sort of day-to-day politics and the mess which is politics.
Yeah, morning, Simon. And again, if I had to add and look at the RAND this morning as well, you know, but that's telling a slightly different story. It's 0.89% weaker, I have, some Friday's close. So maybe a little bit of risk priced in our local currency. But overall, the markets are quite sanguine at the moment with regards to domestic policies. And you'd think after last night's lockdown and extended lockdown, and as you said, some really nasty videos doing the viral rounds of the violence we're seeing in the country, you'd expect a much weaker open. But again, I guess sometimes you get a reminder that we do live in a global marketplace, and we're about to kick off US earnings season, and maybe that's a bit more of the driver for equity traders anyway for the next 5 days.
You mentioned US earnings season. They're probably going to be a good season. I mean, you know, if nothing else, year on year, the US is largely open the second quarter compared to very much shut down last year. And some decent numbers probably coming out.
Yeah, I'm expecting a record earnings season. And, you know, I think also for me, how we position ourselves for the next couple of months, I think it is quite crucial because look at the US S&P 500, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, forward earnings close on 30 times. That market's not cheap. Yeah. It's not cheap at all. And we've been running on a little bit of hot air at the moment, running on the back of, the race between vaccine rollouts. And you've seen the pictures coming out of America after July the 4th. You know, they've effectively ruled this pandemic over, hence the higher stock prices, a little bit of an euphoria built in. But I think now I guess the proof's in the pudding, because now we've got some really decent numbers out this week. JP Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, they kick us off tomorrow. Bank of America, Citigroup on Wednesday. We've got Morgan Stanley Thursday. So all the financials will give us a good indication if these high expensive equity prices are justified given what the earnings are. So I think it's quite a crucial week, Simon, for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I take your point. I mean, S&P all-time highs, NASDAQ, I think just off all-time highs. Those earnings need to come through to justify. In fact, no, NASDAQ also an all-time high. Last question. We got the vote on Friday, Process shareholders approving the swap. Both those shares, Process and Naspers, thanks to Tencent, trading at lows for the year, although actually only back at April of next year. If you look through the crackdown in China and the woes for Tencent, opportunity here for the two biggest stocks in our exchange?
Yeah, I do. I think either way you look at it, they offer compelling reason to own them. We don't even understand half the sort of unlisted companies they've got and the potential they do have. Although, just a little bit of a risk warning there. This China tech crackdown doesn't seem to be going away in a hurry, so there might be a little bit of an overpin. But going back to what you said, it might be an opportunity to pick up some. Two of the most high quality shares rated in South Africa.
Yeah, and Tencent owns astounding stuff. You go through the list of what they own. Epic Games, they own a stake in Tesla. I think it's 6% of Tesla. That boggles my brain every time. Nick Kunz, portfolio manager, Sunlam Private Wealth. Appreciate the time. I polled today on our Twitter, our LinkedIn, our Facebook, asking Nick about NASPAS and Prosus. They are at the lows for the year. Tencent has had a horror year. Price is only back at April of last year. Is this a buying opportunity? Are you out there buying? Let us know. Have your vote and your comment on the NASPAS and Prosus, the two big stocks on our exchange. We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insight into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider, license number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Jenny and I with Rupert Finmore. He's CEO of Easy Properties. Rupert, morning. Appreciate the time. Easy Properties turned a year old, which means we chatted about a year ago about it. I hope you had cake and bubbles in the virtual offices, although, I don't know, lockdown, maybe no bubbles. How's the first year been? I mean, from stats you put on Twitter late on Friday, you've got 30,000 investors. I remember working for a stockbroker 15 years ago, which had 30,000 investors on the JSE. By accounts, been a good first year.
Yeah, I think it's been a really good first year. I suppose in some respects, it feels like a kind of week from a business point of view, 10 years in a lockdown year.
Yeah.
But we're delighted, you know. Fantastic that we've got 30,000 investors. The IPOs have all gone well. It's been terrific.
The other investors, I mean, part of this, the logic behind it was that this could be for smaller investors. I mean, if I just run the numbers, you said you've got units worth about 115 million. That's a little under 4,000 per investor. That is part of the attraction, as I understand, is that I can go. I mean, what Easy Properties is offering is the ability to invest directly into a residential property with a bunch of other investors for a relatively modest amount of money.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's one of the major friction points that people have and want to invest in property is the huge out there of cash that is required. So for our investors, there are no minimums. I mean, you invest as little as 1 rand if you want.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably best typified by our latest Polar Field development, which was about a 16 million raise, and we've had over 13,000 people buy into those units. Our average investment size, so that's 4 grand, is obviously across all of the portfolio, but the average investment size per property investment is about 1,300 grand.
Okay, so and that really is, I mean, no more do I need $1 million or a giant-sized bank loan. How's the process been? I mean, obviously, you mentioned pandemic. I mean, you could have picked a harder year, although I'm not sure where you would have found it. I mean, the flip side is obviously is rentals and that part of the process. How's that part going? As I understand, you have a third party managing that. That's obviously not your skill set, but has that been going fairly well?
Well, interestingly, that's been one of our challenges and I think one of the early learnings.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, launching a business in the middle of a pandemic is an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously a very well-tended soil to be able to launch a business into the easy equities environment. So we've been really spoiled from that regard. But yeah, originally we were outsourcing that rental management. It just turned out that as we handed over our first 40 units, that rental management company went into business rescue.
Oh, no, okay.
So, Yeah, it was one of the major challenges. We had to pivot really quickly, and we just decided that no one's got a better incentive than looking after our portfolio than what we do. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, thankfully we do have the skill set involved, and so we kind of turned on a ticky and have built a rental portfolio management capability. And we're busy kind of scaling as our portfolio scales as well. So that was an interesting one, but I think it was probably brought on a year quicker than what we anticipated, but it was always our goal to look after our own portfolio, but just kind of had to get a hurry up on that.
How many units is there in total? It's what, about 115 million. How many units do you now have in the
we've got 100 units, Simon.
Okay, that's quite chunky. Returns so far. So as I understand, I mean, these are, it's a 5-year term. So there hasn't been sort of exits, but I'm assuming has there been dividends at this point?
Yeah, I think that was actually one of the highlights. We've paid 15 dividends so far, mm-hmm. Across the different portfolios in four chunks, mm-hmm. and we've got another one coming up towards the end of the month as well. So, yeah, we paid out quite a few dividends. You talk about the investment term. I think another one of the highlights and one of the friction points that we were trying to solve for is the liquidity around traditional investing in property. So we've also held our first auction, which enables a bit of liquidity to guards who need it. Mm-hmm. And that went well. I think we were all quite nervous, me especially, as to what the kind of take-up was going to be and how many shares in these investments were offered up for sale. And, we were really delighted. I mean, there were less than 10% of the available shares were put up for auction. And the really pleasing thing was that demand outstripped the supply of the shares quite well. So it was a positive experience all around.
Yeah, and that was, I got to be honest, when we chatted a year ago, that was what I looked at and thought, ooh, that could be the sticking point. But that went well, so that's worked there. What has your sort of yield been over the period if you've been paying some dividends? Or is it sort of too many, not really enough time? Because if you're a year old, you've only just really got a few properties that are 1 year old. Rest would be shorter.
Yeah, so I mean, actually, none of them are a year yet. Obviously, okay. We had to raise in the beginning and wait for the transfer and all of that. So we're coming up to a year, but each one of those property investments offered different and differing yields. But at the moment, we are beating those kind of yields in the dividends that we've returned to the guys. So yeah, that's obviously pleasing.
That's Rupert Finmoy, CEO Easy Properties, on their first birthday. Congrats and looking good. Thanks for the early morning time. We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insight into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider, license number 719.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money.
Jen now with Bono Sager, head of Debt Busters. Bono, I appreciate the early morning. You published your quarterly debt review, as you do every quarter. And I mean, some shocking numbers, which probably made more shocking by the pandemic. I want to get to that in a moment. The one point that really stood out for me, you say that people are applying for debt counseling with take home pay of over 20,000 a month, which is not a shabby salary by any stretch. 60% of their monthly net income is servicing debt. And that, I mean, it's a staggering number, which maybe you can manage it at 60%, but if anything goes slightly wrong, such as a pandemic, and that really then does tip it over the edge and suggest that South Africans are, frankly, chronically over indebted.
Yeah, Simon, nothing like a debt conversation to get people's attention at 6:30 in the morning on a Monday. I appreciate the call and thanks for having me on the show. The debt index is something that Debt Busters publishes every quarter to do exactly as you said. I think make people be aware of what we are facing in South Africa in general, but also more the options available to them. And I think often what happens is people don't really realize that debt is something, for most people who makes it a big chunk of their income, that is something that could be tackled and could be reduced from a monthly payment perspective.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the issue. I mean, you know, one of the challenges we have in South Africa is a really robust financial services industry, which is great, but it makes debt so incredibly easy. And I think a lot of people sort of get into the debt scenario and kind of feel trapped in a sense and feel unable to save. And truthfully, it's hard, it's complex, it's scary, but I mean, there are options out there. I mean, there is, you know, we've got consolidation and debt review and the like, but even just sort of, you know, tackling the issue. And if anything, the last year has taught us that our incomes are perhaps not as safe as we thought.
Yeah, definitely. And what I always tell people is like, start with your income and start with what you're spending money on. It's a straightforward thing, you know, sit down and write these things down or do it on a computer and see what's coming in and what's coming out. And often, I mean, this is our golden rule. We always tell people at Debt Busters, if you're spending more than 40% of your take home or net income on repaying your debt, you're mm-hmm. spending too much and you need to do something about it. It doesn't mean you have to do debt counseling or debt consolidation, mm-hmm. but you have to look at this. And I think, you know, of course, the situations that we see aren't by any stretch, you know, reflection of the entire population that's out there. You know, that's an important disclaimer to make. We're in the business of debt counseling.
Sure.
However, from the array of what we have seen, often this is considered to be something for lower income groups, and that's not the case at all. I mean, we have people paying as little as, you know, 800 grand a month towards debt, depending on their debt situation. We have people paying as much as 125,000 rand per month towards their debt. So this cuts along, you know, it cuts along yeah. ethnic lines, it cuts along income levels, it cuts along everything. And often, you know, like I say, if you are genuinely spending more than 40%, that's not right. You have to do something about it because it's not sustainable.
And I take your point there. Debt doesn't take race, class, or income into account at all. But you make a great point there. Oftentimes when people are feeling indebted, they focus on the income. They hope for a salary increase or win the lotto or maybe a side hustle. But what they can actually truly honestly manage is where they're spending that money. And that needs to be their focus. And if you're spending more than 40% on debt, focus on getting that number down first.
Yeah, absolutely. Simon, one of the first things we do, I give training to our new staff in terms of problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first questions we ask is, what can you do to save 1,000 rand more per month?
Mm-hmm.
And often, as you say, people will focus on, right, my side hustle, I can sell this, or, you know, I can negotiate a better salary, I can change jobs, all of that. And, you know, you would rarely find, maybe one out of five people would also go the extra dimension and say, I can lower my expenses.
Yeah.
And that's the conversation I think we want to make people be aware. And debt is one of those, you know, it's one of the biggest expenses. And what you can do, particularly in the case of debt counseling, is, you know, if you meet the conditions, firstly, it's a long road. I mean, just like one takes a long time to get into such debt trouble, it also takes a while to get out of it. But it provides significant cash flow relief for consumers by reducing interest rates and extending the amount of time that you have to pay back those loans. And I think that's not even on the radar of many of our consumers and certainly not listeners. And I think people need to be aware that we have this National Credit Act that actually allows for this.
Yeah, and the point is, once you've paid that debt, now you've got significant cash flow, and then we can try and become a nation of savers. But now, Sega, head Debt Busters, appreciate the early morning, sir. That's it for today. Our poll on Friday on our LinkedIn, our Twitter, our Facebook, social medias, we were asking, we saw that massive Resi sell-off on Thursday, down 4%. We asked if it was worrying you, were you panicking? A fifth of you said, yeah, you were selling. But the rest of you were saying, nope, just a blip, a flesh wound, and you're not worried at all. I'm in that group, although it was a nasty Friday. Thursday, we did see some nice bounce back coming through on Friday, however. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with our investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Remember, we are live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app at 6:30 a.m. podcast available just after 7. A huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Kodora, Nicole and Masekhla, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.